Hello, this is Capital Notes from KQED Public Radio, our weekly look at California politics, public policy, government, stuff.
And et cetera.
And et cetera. Well said. Maybe that's the new intro. I'm John Myers from KQED, and Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly, here as always in our studio across from the state capitol. I'm happy to still be here. Last week, I alluded to the fact that I was worried I might not be here.
Yep. And you survived.
I'm still here.
So now that you survived, maybe you'll be gone next week.
Though I'm sorry to say about 35 of my colleagues at KQED were laid off this week.
Ouch.
So, yeah. Bad times around the news business. So my best to those folks. Hey, let's not start on a downer. Let's talk about the budget. Let's talk about a real upper, the $40 billion budget deficit. So obviously, we're still watching the budget. We want to talk about that a little bit. And then we want to talk about the big, exciting Capital Weekly poll.
Dun, dun, dun.
The survey, the California survey. What do you call it, actually?
The Capital Weekly Probosky Research California poll.
That is too long of a title.
Yes.
Okay.
We're hoping that if you give it a really long title, that people will just know it as the Capital Weekly poll.
Hmm. Maybe we could have an acronym out of that, but we'll come up with that later.
Quib-crick.
Somehow that doesn't work, no. Even though all the other acronyms we have in state government have held on. All right, well, so let's talk about our latest on the budget saga, of which there really isn't a lot. Last week, Anthony, you were the man talking about the cone of silence.
Yes.
Under budget negotiations, which has been the theme du jour or several days.
Du jours.
Nice French.
Yeah.
In state newspapers, and different reporters have said the same thing, that the negotiations go on, but we haven't got a heck of a lot that we know what's happening in terms of leaks about what might be a deal, if any.
Although today, the Senate leader, Daryl Steinberg from Sacramento.
That would be Thursday.
Today, Thursday. said that next week there should be a vote. Now, you know, we've heard this before, so
right.
Take it.
We heard the February 1st deadline. We've heard lots of deadlines.
Right. But so take it with the proverbial grain of salt, but maybe mark it in pencil for next week. Maybe before Lincoln's birthday.
Maybe. You know, what we did see, of course, this week is the clamor in the interest group world got even more clamorous. Loud.
Yes.
I mean, in particular, two things that come to mind. One on the left would be labor unions that not only talked about the possibility of recalls against some people, but they started a media campaign of mailers and radio ads against some Republican lawmakers. Then they had this thing at the end of the week, which I still haven't quite read the whole thing. I wasn't reporting on it. The whole notion that filing some thing with the Attorney General about trading your votes or giving away your votes for something or
publicity stunt.
Well, there you go. I'm sure.
Great. I made a lot of friends in the labor
organized
and environmental
labor
world.
Loves you right
great,
now.
Great.
But suffice it to say, they did not think things had been on the up and up on the Republican side. Meantime, on the Republican side, you had one well-known Republican, a gentleman named John Fleischman, who may listen to the podcast, who does a blog called The Flash Report and is the vice chairman of the California Republican Party, talking about a formal censure motion to bring to the party's convention later this month for any lawmakers who would vote for a tax increase, if they vote for a tax increase when a budget deal is announced.
Helping things along.
Yeah, both sides, just not feeling the love.
Well, and you know, there's a sense that increased activity and anxiety on the sort of political polls is an indication that perhaps there really is a deal at hand.
Well, that's the thing, though. But does it help it or hurt it?
Yes.
I could make an argument either way. Yes, thank you.
I guess it depends who you respond to, what drummer you march to. You know, I don't know. At this point, you know, you have people like John and Ken, the radio
talk show guys in Los Angeles.
Right. Taking, having effigies of Anthony Adams and Chuck DeVore, I mean, very conservative Republican assemblymen, and it just makes you wonder who they're playing to and whether these people on the left and on the right are in touch with the constituents that these elected officials represent or not.
So we keep watching and waiting to see if we get a budget deal, and of course, if we're lucky enough to have something, the next week we can chew over that one for a little bit.
Yes, lucky. It's like Christmas, isn't it?
Lucky is such a relative word these days. Meantime, at the end of the week here, we're having the beginning of, what I kind of call really one of the first real impacts that people can see of the state's fiscal problems, which are the furloughs of state workers. Furlough Friday, which amounts to about a 9% cut in their pay per month for the average rank and file state worker. So most, and I find this interesting because this really wasn't clear until the end of the week, most state workers of the 235,000 or so pool of rank and file state workers, most of them, 90% of them, will have a furlough every other Friday. Only a limited few are having their furloughs on different days of the month because they don't want to close down those agencies. And you know, you can think of some of these, highway patrol, prisons. You're not going to close those down every other Wednesday, though Friday, though closing down prisons every other Friday could be interesting. And
that would be. We'll send them to your house. Cooking?
That would make for some news. Yeah, pots of chili sitting there. But 90% of the state workers get that furlough every other Friday, which if you, according to the governor's office estimates, gives you about $1.3 billion of savings over the next 17 months. You can debate whether $1 billion is a lot or not a lot in light of a $40 billion problem. You'll take it. I'll take it. But it's the first furlough of state workers in California history. And we really don't know how it's going to play out and how the public's going to react.
Yeah, and there's a lot of speculation that, hey, this first Friday and later on this month, that it might not seem so bad, but that when workers get their paychecks and then add to that a potential tax increase, and, you know, these things are going to add up, and it's not going to be fun.
Yeah, there's an argument there's an economic impact when you're talking about economic stimulus. That's the opposite of it.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, especially in Sacramento, where you have a large concentration of state employees, what the impacts are going to be on restaurants and other businesses that rely on state employment. I mean, I guess we'll see tomorrow, you know, downtown here in Sacramento, what it's like outside, and we'll be hearing from businesses, I'm sure. But this isn't something that's going to go away with a budget deal. Remember, this is a part of the budget solution going forward. Unless the governor works out a different deal with unions or a different way to find that $1 to $1.5 billion worth of savings, the furloughs are here for the foreseeable future. Wow, that's a lot of Fs.
Yeah, I mean, but it's a 17-month period. You're right. I mean, everybody says you've got to find savings in state employee compensation. And nobody's come up with anything else that seems to work that way. And certainly the governor has a court ruling that says he can do it.
Right.
And so there you go. Now, the court ruling is an interesting side note. And I don't know that it's really fair to call it a complete side note. But when you talk about the group of state workers we're talking about 15,000 out of 235,000, it's a side note. And that group of workers that I just referred to work for the constitutional officers, which, can you name them all?
Controller,
one,
treasurer,
two,
insurance commissioner,
three,
lieutenant governor,
four,
controller, treasurer, I'm stalling for
superintendent of
public construction, secretary of state, let's see.
That's all. You got them.
Governor.
Congratulations. Governor. Well, yeah, except governor is controlling his own thing. But the ones who work for all those other constitutional officers, actually, I should be careful to say the insurance commissioner is not in the Constitution that was created by initiative. All of those independently elected.
Was it not a constitutional amendment that created it?
Yeah, but it wasn't.
One of the founders.
Let's not dilly on that. Or dally. Either one. But none of those independently elected officials. The theory goes is what happens to the workers who work for those independently elected officials? Are they subject to the furlough order or not? Now, when the case was argued in court last week, it was brought by the labor unions that represent workers who work under the direct authority of the governor. And so that was the question. What does the governor have to do there? There's also this debate about what the governor's original executive order said. Who did it say it applied to? And, you know, the people who think that group of workers who I've already talked about, the small group, who think they're not furloughed, say, well, it didn't apply to us because it said we're not under his direct authority. I've gone longer than this probably merits at this point anyway. But it's an interesting little skirmish here at the end. So the judge came back on Thursday morning and said, that wasn't the question before me. I have no opinion on that.
Right.
And people have interpreted that different ways. And there's actually been some criticism of the early press reports here because the first headlines on the internet say, court says governor can't furlough right. constitutional office or employees. That's not exactly what the ruling said. It just said, I have no opinion on the matter, which I think means if you want me to have an opinion, bring a separate case.
Right. And I'm sure that that's coming. But remember, all of the constitutional officers, including the one Republican, the state insurance commissioner, Steve Poizner, who we'll talk about a little bit later in a different context, have said that they will not abide by the furlough order for their departments. So, right. So I think by the judge not ruling, and given the fact that all the constitutional officers have said are not going to abide by this furlough proposal, that by default, it says, at least for now, come tomorrow, that that those people will not be furloughed.
Well, it'll be an interesting kerfuffle.
Kerfuffle.
There's the kerfuffle. I used that word in a blog posting on Thursday.
Did you spell it properly?
K-E-R-F-U-F-F-L-E. Kerfuffle.
Yeah. L-E-E-L?
L-E. Come on.
E-L is the German.
I won the spelling bee in fifth grade. Come on. But it'll be an interesting kerfuffle next week because a lot of those employees who work for those constitutional officers are members of the labor unions that were in court. You know, for example, SEIU, Local 1000, counts as its members many of these workers. So the question will be, you know, are they going to be treated differently than their friends who work at Caltrans or at Health and Human Services? Anyway, I have a feeling we're going to see a Schwarzenegger v. Chung lawsuit or case or something in court next week, so stay tuned.
And this is just great for John Chung. I mean, politically, you know.
Elevates him.
In the most Machiavellian, cynical way, anytime you can pick a fight with the governor and get press, I mean, John Chung has proven very adept at doing this and getting his name in the news much more than any other controller.
Last summer, as you're referring to, right, when it was the whole thing about could he implement the pay cuts.
The pay cuts, and Chung parlayed that into a speaking role at the Democratic National Convention in Denver. Yeah, I think John Chung has certainly made a lot of friends in among organized labor, and something tells me that he might have his eyes on higher office.
Really?
You don't think so?
Oh, no, sure. But, I mean, do you think soon, as in 2010?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, not that I've heard. I have no reason to believe that he won't run for re-election.
Let it marinate a few years, you're saying.
Yeah, but, and you know, perhaps this is, perhaps, you know, 6 years from now, if he does run for higher office, that it's long since forgotten. But who knows? I mean, he's on our watch list. This John Chung, I think he's going places.
Well, suffice it to say, it'll be interesting to see what happens. You're right. The impact a few weeks out from now of the furloughs. So let's transition to our much more meaty politically segment of the podcast this week, which is the new Capital Weekly Probleski Research California poll upon public policy.
Or, if you prefer, the Capital Weekly poll.
Cap Weekly poll.
We have partnered with Probleski Research, right, based in Orange County.
And this is your first one. This is the inaugural
first ever
poll.
It's the first ever. So, and you know, this is...
What's the headline?
The headline that we chose today, we sort of focus on the political reforms that only because the Public Policy Institute of California just a couple of weeks ago surveyed some of the same stuff that we did, right track, wrong track, governor's performance review. We focused on some political reforms, a couple that we thought were interesting. We tested the support for a part-time legislature.
And what did you find?
We found about half of the voters in the state support the idea.
Half of those surveyed.
So half of those surveyed, right. So it's a survey of 752 voters, registered voters. And that half of those surveyed supported, I believe it was 53% support the idea of a part-time legislature. About a third of those who responded did not support the idea, and the rest were undecided. So
that just seems like one of those that's out there that could just catch fire at a moment's notice.
Absolutely.
I mean, that is the ultimate in, and I'm not dismissing the people who say that it's a valid proposal, but it is the ultimate in a populist feel-good pop to the legislature of saying we're making you part-time.
It is the nuclear option, or nuclear, if you prefer.
That's the former administration.
Okay, these are the Obama years.
Right? So about what you say, 53% support there?
And similar numbers. We also tested the what's known as the top two primary system.
Some reform of the primary elections.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry, it was 51% for the part-time legislature, but that's within the margin of error, 3.5.
So it could have been 54 or 48.
Could have been.
And anyway, sorry.
It wasn't.
Let's don't play margins of error. I'm sorry. You were talking okay. about primary reform.
Yeah, and we tested this idea of the top two primary. This is something that has been discussed, embraced by the governor as something that could be on the ballot in a couple of years. That would instead of the top finisher in each political party moving through to the general election, you would have the top two vote getters. So in San Francisco, for example, you could foreseeably have two Democrats facing off in a general election in the deep behind the orange curtain in Orange County. You would have two Republicans facing off, being the top two vote getters. And the idea is that proponents of this idea say that it would reduce partisanship. That you know, if you had a moderate Democrat running against a liberal Democrat in a solidly Democratic area, that the moderate could get support from Republicans in a general election. And perhaps it would reduce some of the partisanship that we see in Sacramento.
Yeah, you know, we'll leave a long discussion of this to another podcast. I mean, there are a lot of ideas for primary reform out there. And I always think it's careful when you start talking about government reform and making the legislature more moderate. It's very difficult to figure out what exactly is the right way to do that. You know, redistricting was said it could do that, right. And I'm not so sure that's true. The top two primary may or may not do it. So it's fascinating when you get to these kind of things of the voters tinkering with the system. Do they really get what they think they're getting when they would do it? But clearly you found people are willing to consider it.
So, yeah, again, yeah. About half of those responded. But, you know, this is something that, I mean, this question is in a vacuum. Look, all political parties oppose this idea. The Democrats, the Republicans, a lot of the third parties, because it reduces their influence and their power in the election system. So, you know, whether or not that's an idea that California voters would embrace and whether or not this is the reform that the governor actually gets behind in 2010, we'll see. But this is a very early barometer of
a glimpse
of where California voters are before the gazillion dollar campaigns get started.
So obviously you talked about the economy and issues that matter to people. And I mean, I don't think there's any surprise there. You know, no offense to the poll.
No,
I mean,
far and away.
Right track, wrong track. People overwhelmingly think the state is on the wrong track at this point.
61% to 25%.
Yeah. And there are a lot of people who are not so enamored with the job Governor Schwarzenegger is doing right now.
No, you know, fair to poor. It was a 68% of those responded.
Now, one of those, is that the one where you have some breakdown by ethnicity? Because what is that the right one, the governor's ratings?
Yes. Although, do I have those numbers?
Or no, you're looking at one right there. Is that right?
Yeah, here it is right here.
Okay. Well, see, I'm looking across the table here. But I was just going to say, this is a minor thing, and I know it's you have to be careful when you get down into breakdowns of those kind of subgroups because you don't have as big of a sample size for the poll.
Right.
Nonetheless, I find that there are more weaknesses and more unhappiness among different ethnic groups in California, and why I think that's something to watch is that we are becoming a majority-minority state, and white Anglo-Saxon Protestant voters are not going to be driving the ship, and so you would think that politicians would start to look at these different groups to see how they right Latino voters, Asian voters, African Americans.
Right, absolutely, and you know, I mean, there is a partisan thing here as well. You know, the large number of Latinos and Black voters, still the vast majority of both ethnic groups in this state, are Democrats, and so seems to be more dissatisfaction with the governor among Democrats. And look, and it's not surprising. I mean, look at the battles that the governor's having now. Predominantly with organized labor. I mean, he's having his issues with the Republicans as well. And if there is a tax increase that's approved and bears the governor's signature, and we ask this question again, it would be interesting to see how Republicans feel about their governor. But absolutely. I mean, 82% of Latinos who were polled felt that the governor was doing either a fair or poor job.
Compared to overall what?
68. Yeah.
So that I think is an interesting one right there, because think about the group that like the Republican Party is trying to reach right now, who are Latino voters.
Right.
And what does that hold for 2010 if those numbers hold up?
Well, and to what extent is the party embracing the governor?
Transference
too?
Of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So these are all things, you know, we're going to be conducting this a survey like this every couple of months, and it'll be interesting to watch the change in attitudes as the next elections approach.
So you do ask some of the same questions, and that's your plan every time?
That is the plan. Not all the same questions. We'll mix it up a little bit.
So you get a consistent glimpse of particular issues.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about some of the fun politics that was in there as well, because I don't want to jump ahead if you had something else you're going to talk about, but you talk about potential matchups for 2010 in the race for governor.
Yes.
Right?
And we found that it is very early.
Goodbye.
The Democratic result, not surprising. U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein, far and away the choice among Democrats, and declined to states who say that they want to vote for a Democrat. 36%. The next closest challenger is the Attorney General, Jerry Brown, 14%. And the two young.
That's a gap right there.
Huge. Yeah. And the next two upstarts, San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom and Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, each have about 9%. Now, you know, there are most people around the Capitol, I think, believe that Feinstein probably won't run. She's flirted with the idea of running.
She did it again this past week. I think she had an appearance on Hardball on MSNBC.
Right. Chris Matthews.
And once again kind of did this, well, I'm set up here doing all this stuff, but I really care about what's happening in the state. And it's like,
Right. Well, and, you know, and it's a job that she ran for and narrowly lost to Pete Wilson in 1990. And it's the job that she apparently has always wanted. She flirted with the idea of running in 1998. She flirted with it again in 2002. And
Recall, 2003.
Right. Yeah. There was even some mention there. But, you know, now that most Capitol insiders have written her off, that probably means she will end up running.
We didn't poll
without her.
Right. And that would be fascinating, because when you look at your numbers below that, and we'll stay on the Democrats just for another couple of seconds, Brown 14%, Newsom 9%, Villaraigosa 9%. That's a pretty close race between those three. And so if Feinstein didn't run, where would her votes go?
Right.
Would they go to Brown as the establishment, well-known figure? Would they go to one of the upstarts? I mean, that could be interesting. So.
Yeah, and it's going to be something that we watch, and I think that next time we poll, we'll probably poll with and without Feinstein.
And I'm peeking across at your numbers. 22% of those surveyed were unsure
even
in the Democratic race.
Choices.
Even with all those choices, 1 out of 5 still didn't know.
And we also included the lieutenant governor, John Garamendi, the superintendent of public instruction, Jack O'Connell, and former controller Steve Wesley.
Right. And those were all 4, 3, and 1, respectively.
Yes.
I always like when we say respectively. It's almost that we're respectful.
Almost.
Which we're almost. So let's talk about the Republicans.
The Republicans, actually kind of an interesting result, although not surprisingly, 62% of Republicans and declined to states who are inclined to vote Republican. 62% of those surveyed said they don't know. They're
compared
unsure.
Compared to 20-some of the Democrats.
Right. And that's with Feinstein in the race. Mm-hmm. And it's because the choices that the Republicans have are clearly not as well-known statewide. We had at the top of our survey was former Congressman Tom Campbell, who was Governor Schwarzenegger's director of finance for a while.
And ran for the Senate one time
in
for the U.S. Senate
against
Feinstein. But I was surprised by that. I didn't see most people getting Campbell right off the bat there. And that's higher name ID than I would have thought.
Right. And followed closely by former eBay CEO Meg Whitman at 14%.
Who we think will declare her candidacy any day
soon. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then third, we have a already declared candidate, current insurance commissioner Steve Poizner.
You kicked him out of office
at 4%. Now, I do want to, you know, a word of caution on those numbers. First of all, very early, it's just a test basically of name ID. But even then, the ballot designation, you know, for example, we asked the question as we identified Meg Whitman as the former eBay CEO. Mm-hmm. Now, on the ballot, she will not be allowed to call herself the former eBay CEO. You can't use the name of a company. You can't use a proper name on your ballot designation.
In which case, people may be picking eBay more than picking Meg Whitman.
Well, and that's just it. That this test really, it's that the eBay brand is much better than the insurance brand.
Are you saying your poll is flawed?
No, I'm saying that we're pointing out nuances in the poll.
Well, you know, but I think all of that, I don't want to get off the subject because I think the subject is worth discussing for a moment, but all of that, again, shows why polls have to be considered in context.
Right.
And polls have to be taken with a grain of salt, even good polls like your poll.
Exactly.
I'm giving you a pat on the back.
Thank you.
All polls have to be considered in the context of the questions asked and the way that the person had to consider the issues.
And that's the goal. I mean, we want to be – this poll is going to be more political than – overtly political than the PPIC poll or the field poll, and so especially this far out from an election. We're asking questions that are – because we know that the top two primary discussion is being, it's something that's kicking around here. So we're trying to gauge early opinions on it. I mean, we know that these attitudes change dramatically once the campaigns start, once a lot of money is spent in the framing of the debate. But we're just trying to get our toe in the water here and get some sense.
Let's go back to the Republicans really quickly, because I don't want to short shrift them. So in this early poll, Campbell came out a little higher in terms of preference, followed by Whitman, followed by Poizner.
Right.
Poizner being a good bit down, but again,
Campbell and Whitman virtually tied.
Yeah, all the caveats you've given to the Poizner camp,
right.
You know, it's early in the race. Poizner and Whitman have
$19,000 gazillion dollars.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the appropriate. They got a lot of money personally,
yes,
that they can push out there to push their name ID, to push their issues. Campbell's never going to have as deep a pockets in this primary battle, should he follow through and do the whole thing. And
Campbell is not exactly the grassroots choice of the Republican Party. I mean, Campbell is a very moderate Republican.
But neither, none of them are.
Right.
And that is going to be the most fascinating part, I think, of that primary.
Right.
If Campbell, Whitman, and Poizner all, in fact, actually run and do a full-on campaign, they are all somewhat moderate, centrist Republicans.
Right.
In which case, what happens to the conservative base of that party? Where do they go? How are they courted? Who tries to push what issue against the other candidate?
And could there be someone like a Daryl Issa, someone like a Bill Simon, someone who has a
diehard conservative?
Yeah, a more traditional conservative. And we, you know, one name that had been floated by our friend John Fleischman, who we mentioned earlier, is Ventura County Supervisor Peter Foy, who's a conservative Republican. Certainly not a lot of name ID. I mean, I didn't know who he was before. We tested him in the poll as well. It was, you know, he got 1% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing it came from Ventura County, although I don't know. but I think that there is room in this race for a conservative to gain some traction, and especially a conservative with money. I mean, I think Daryl Issa is a real possibility.
Well, and I find, as a reporter sitting here so early, so outside of where we're really going to start covering that race, I find the Republican primary more interesting at this point, because I think that battle
really?
You
have so much hair gel in the Democratic primary.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Hair gel, Jerry Brown? Where's hair gel?
Well, no. He's no hair.
You're thinking the slick back Gavin Newsom look.
And the Viragosa.
Okay.
That
being said, I apparently am not a fan of hair gel. That being said, I think the Republican primary really sounds interesting to me, because it is this battle for the future of where that party's going to go. Its conservative roots, with all due respect to the conservatives, have not played well at the polls statewide with this moderate-seeming electorate that we have in California. So here you've got three moderates, basically, trying to play to a conservative base in the wake of Arnold Schwarzenegger, the megastar, you know, and battling whoever the well-known name on the Democratic side would be. I find the Republican primary really much more interesting than if you would have said a year ago. I would have thought, blah. But, I mean, this is interesting.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that can only get more interesting if a conservative, a more conservative candidate gets in the race. I mean, well, you know, it's a long way to go, but we'll be watching.
Everything is a long way to go these days.
Not the budget.
Politics,
that's happening next week.
The budget. So you really think it's going to happen? You want to make a prediction?
I think that Daryl Steinberg really said that, yes.
Yeah, but do you think it really will happen?
They don't pay me to think, Myers.
Wait a minute. Don't you pay yourself? Aren't you the editor of the paper?
Have you... No comment.
Okay, no comment. I haven't looked at your paycheck.
I am the editor of the paper. Yes.
I haven't looked at your paycheck. I'm happy to have a paycheck. We will just leave
it
where it is.
Exactly.
All right, well, next week we hope to talk about a budget deal. Hint, people inside the Capitol, hint. Let's get it going, folks. And we'll be back with more fun. So for Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. See you next time.